Well, it happened. I was asked to join a Rings of Power conversation with some Lord of the Rings geeks, and I said yes. October 11th at 8 p.m. Eastern, I'm going to be joining three other podcast hosts to talk about Rings of Power Season 2. Now, they all actually talk about Lord of the Rings all the time, and I don't. I'm considered the outsider of the group. I'm not nervous about it at all. I'm totally nervous about it, especially because I haven't even watched it yet. But don't tell them that. I can still watch it. There's still time. This live event will, again, start at 8 p.m. Eastern, and you have to register for the event, and part of the proceeds will be supporting charity. So that's pretty cool. You can register for the live event right now at ringspodcast.com/live. A link is in the description of the podcast today, and also you can find it on Discord in the Captain's Pod channel. I'll pin it to the top. So join Captain's Pod, me, John from Lorehounds, Marilyn from Rings and Rituals, and Aaron from Lore of the Rings, October 11th from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern at ringspodcast.com/live to talk about Rings of Power Season 2. Okay, bye. Can I give you some audio to put at the beginning of this episode? Hi, everybody. Today's episode, I am fully R-rated. This is your warning that you want to listen to this before you let any children listen to it. Okay, bye.
Captain's Pod, Stardate 1682-34.1. Welcome aboard the Starship Enterprise, and thank you for joining us as we take a brief shore leave from the world of CinemaSins to explore the universe of Star Trek. I'm your Captain Ian Whittington, and with me as always, she loves being in the brig. It's actually her favourite place. It's Ambassador Danae.
Nobody bothers you. You still get your food. Basically, you get to nap however long you want.
You actually would like the brig, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
What would you like in the brig, in like 24th century brig? I'll paint the picture for you. Could you, how long could you exist in the brig comfortably? You've got the lights of the force field, which I think are pretty much always on. You have a little station that's built into the wall. It's like a integrated kitchen. Like everything is just, it looks exactly the same. And you can like open it up, you get a splash of water, no replicator, you get some towels and a flat bed. And everything is grey, and there's carpet, and there's one security guard that you can look at.
Okay, and the question is how long, like how long would I feel about that?
Yeah, how long could you stay in there comfortably?
Let me just paint a quick picture for you. Leave me alone. Let me just paint a quick picture for you. Okay, I'm a mom of dogs, cat, and child. Mm-hmm. I have no time to myself.
Oh yeah.
I am laid upon. I can't shit alone.
Mm-hmm.
Recently, this cat. Mm-hmm. Has revealed another personality trait I didn't know about, which is that when I go to the bathroom, I'm already visited by my two dogs. And if my daughter is home, she's in there with me too. Doesn't matter what I'm doing. Now the cat comes also and jumps on the back of the toilet and paws at me to pet him too.
This stop fucking focusing on the toilet.
Is a dream come true. I get to have alone time.
Mm-hmm.
Be by myself. No one touches me.
That's kind of why I'm asking, because I know initially you'll be like, fuck yeah, let's go.
But when
does that wear off based on what I described?
Never.
Weeks. That's amazing.
Never. No.
Perfect vacation.
I would entertain myself easily, I'm pretty sure.
Under the supervision of just one security guard standing at a console.
We have to be honest. That security guard and I are going to become friends. I love talking to people. You would befriend them.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. We would do like the chess, you know, on either side kind of a thing.
Yeah, the Menage a Trois chess. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Eventually, I would be given, you know, more things to do, read books.
Mm-hmm.
I probably would end up launching my own podcast from the brig because
from the brig.
There's so many things to talk about.
Brigcast.
The Brigcast, yeah.
Amazing. Well, while you're in there, I think one of the things you might be pondering is what could possibly be happening in this week's episode of Lower Decks, which is called Moist Vessel.
This is a vaginal episode.
I mean, you can go there if you like. That's the number one, probably, inspiration. This is an episode about vaginas?
Yeah. Is the vaginal canal considered a vessel?
I don't feel comfortable answering that.
This is the question I have. Because a vessel is something that holds, like, is it just liquid? Mm-hmm. What is the definition of a vessel? Let's look this up. For the purposes of understanding the episode, but for the purposes of understanding the vagina.
Any description you're going to have for vessel is going to now sound sexual.
A hollow container, especially one used to hold liquid, such as a bowl or a cask. So it's meant to hold liquid, so I don't think that counts.
In the context of Star Trek, what it's do you think moist vessel is referring to?
Corridor, really.
Mm-hmm. Just corridor. But no, they corridors usually have an exit.
That's true. Let's look up the definition of corridor.
I'll meet you in 10 forward.
A passage along the side of a railroad car from which the doors lead into compartments. That's the British version. A belt of land linking two other areas or following a road or river. Here we go. A long passage in a building from which doors lead into rooms. That is not it. No.
None of that is right. No.
No. No. I'm just going to look up the definition of vagina. Define vagina. Ah! A muscular tube. There you go.
There we go. Okay. We'll see you in 10 forward to discuss some muscular tubes too, to be mouth. Welcome to 10 Forward, the part of the show where we grab something from the replicator and share our immediate thoughts and feelings on the episode we just watched. Most important question first, what would you like from the replicator? Plenty to choose from this week.
Did Boimler say that there was something about macaroni and cheese with like bread puffs at the very end?
With like a fancy topping on it, yeah. Or was it shrimp puffs? There was something fancy on top of his macaroni and cheese. Yeah.
I think it's got to be that. I think it's got to be, it has to be that.
I won't be replicating the gnocchi that he was so excited about.
Because
it's just
gnocchi.
Absolute bullshit. What even, like, it's bullshit. It's just little puffs of horribly textured nonsense.
Don't come at my gnocchi.
I will come at it. It tastes like nonsense. Lobster ravioli, on the other hand, is delicious. But I want some room temperature colored sand. That's what I'll be replicating.
Yes. I like how she specified the temperature of the sand. Yes. That was nice.
Because the computer always asks, what temperature? It's amazing.
Since we're talking about, there was a lot of replicated food in this, and since it is part of like what we do here at the top, can we talk about the pudding though? Because when I was growing up, I went to a public school and we had the public cafeteria and the pudding always had a film on top of it. Did yours as well?
Like a plastic film or a edible
no,
film?
No, just where the pudding had been sitting out long enough that it had, like it had.
Yeah.
They had solidified slightly on top, and so you had to peel the pudding film off to get to like the juicy stuff.
Correct.
The moist stuff, I should say.
Or you just eat it. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's immediately what I tasted with the tacos and pudding. I was expecting that to be Tendy being like, you can have my tacos, and he was like, yeah, tacos, but instead it was pudding. I did not expect that.
The most disappointing pudding cup that I've ever seen as well.
It was so small.
give us a weird synopsis. I say weird because this is a weird episode.
Is it a weird episode? What makes this episode weird?
Structurally, for me, structurally, this is a weird episode.
Oh, this is a great episode. Let's get into it. On today's episode, we really get to go tit for tat, mom to daughter, on why they are both so alike that they hate each other.
Yeah.
I was triggered multiple times.
I kept looking over to you. I was like, is she okay? Has she left yet?
because mother-daughter trauma is something that mothers and daughters often have. And so it was an interesting reminder. Mm-hmm. Overlaid on this is the idea that the mother is actively attempting to pressure the daughter to quit her ship so she doesn't have to deal with her daughter. It's another part of it. They're all doing their duties. We get to see what the lower decks is actually all about.
Yeah.
Scraping stuff and fixing stuff. And we get to see a little bit more of Tendy's personality as she obsesses over someone liking her and eventually watches them die.
I think I might be Tendy. I think of all of the people, I'm somewhere between Boimler and Tendy. I mean, I haven't watched anyone die, but in terms of like, you must like me and I must find out why you don't like me if you don't.
Yeah, there's a scene at the very end where Tendy is essentially like breaking
Rutherford's
arm. Yeah.
Tell me what you know.
Yeah, she's intense. And now, like, we know why, because we've watched other episodes. But at this point, if you're watching the season for the first time, you're not really quite sure why she is this intense.
Mm.
But I like seeing that part of her personality and that there's a familiarity there because I've seen her in this like warrior mode.
This is still like very much our introduction to Tendy. So it's interesting to watch it knowing where she ends up.
Yeah.
I think there's like what you mentioned about like the mother-daughter stuff is great in this episode. It's really, really good, and it's like really genuine. And it reminded me of why I got so frustrated with season 3 and 4. Because when I watched this in season one, I'm like, this makes sense. I get it. When you see them having very similar arguments in season 3 and 4, that's when I was like, ah, come on, move on. We've done this so much. So it was hard for me to rewatch this and just be like, this isn't going to get any kind of resolution. Ugh. We're going to play this drumbeat so much. But I put that to one side because this the way it's done in this episode, it's the first time that we're really seeing them clash head on and have a lot of screen time together. So I was interested like to hear if you enjoyed it or not, because you also know like where Mariner ends up and where she's going. And I was curious about whether with that knowledge, this episode would have been a bit tedious for you. But it sounds like you had a good time with it.
I did. Yeah, I thought it was a good progression. This is a nice progression for a season because you're continuing to see character flaws. But I'm with you thinking about what we see in the future and the lack of progression or resolution. I think it gets annoying later, but I'm going to put that aside and just say for what it is in the storyline right now, it's simply a little more detail about this horrible captain who I just now firmly do not like. Oh, she's awful.
Just she's beyond awful. Beyond believable. Like, so terrible. She is this. We've gone back into corporate America. This is constructive dismissal. This is horrible. Yeah. This is like, give your employee the worst job so that you don't have to deal with them. You don't have to fire with them. You bully them into quitting. This is horrible. This is it's pretty irredeemable.
Bad. Yeah. Yeah. There's really no watching this and kind of shifting back and forth into this is firmly reality. This is planted and embedded and true to Star Trek, and I'm taking this seriously. And it is also a cartoon. There's this pull and push for that to make sense in my brain, but because I choose to kind of take it more seriously, I can't imagine being raised by somebody who would rather sabotage my entire life or my day or my work just to get me off of her
ship.
Just
to not be around you.
Yeah. So everything she does to self-destruct later, it's like, look at your fucking mom.
You think? She's kind of pushed her that way. That's a good way to put it. There was a great point made last week by the live chat that, and this is the only way I can believe it, is that we've seen terrible captains appear in Star Trek. We've just never had them be the ship that we're following.
Right.
So there are when you have hundreds and hundreds of captains out there, there will be a shitty one. It just, it's weird when you're on that ship with them.
It is. Yes.
She does not deserve this command.
Yeah. I think like it asks us, I don't know if it's on purpose or not, but I'm just going to say it asks me specifically to like wrestle with what it means to not appreciate a captain. Because usually I try because they sort of are in a Picard place in my imagination. Yeah. So
you want them to be the hero.
We've had this chat with Shaw, for example, who is super gritty and borderline disrespectful in a way, but also I got it. I got his character, and I kind of appreciated that he was more letter of the law, say it like it is, unapologetic. And
protecting his crew. That was the bottom line behind everything he was doing. Like, I'm not going to go into a phaser fight. Yeehaw, like you guys did in the good old days.
Right. He was a very relatable character to me after a little while. Of course, I kept wondering if he was actually this deeply nefarious person. But then shifting over to Freeman.
Yeah, Freeman.
I'm Carol. Wow. Okay. The mom stuff is interesting, right? Like because I'm dealing with this too as a new mom. And my daughter who is, you know, getting into that school age, it's this push and pull of wanting them to succeed and knowing that you did it a certain way. And so this is how you did it. So certainly that works. But then like when she's nitpicking everything that Mariner is doing, I am watching this going, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do this. So like when Iris is going to do something and I purposefully give her the lead on something and I see her doing it like the most complicated way with the dumbest tools, because I am a more experienced human than she is, and I'm going to think about things completely different. It's not It's not dumb. It's her figuring out how she's going to get to her best way. But it is so hard to turn this part of my brain off that's like wanting to give a correction. However, correction can come across as criticism really, really easily
so
to a little
easily.
One.
Yeah.
So quickly. Yeah, because it's not. So she picks a rock that's going to take her longer. Like, what else do you have to do? Now, I mean, in the ship, they're saving the day. They really are on a time crunch. Like, no. But in my real life, yeah, if we have to sit here and play with this clay with the wrong tools for an extra 40 minutes, like, really, what trouble is that causing in my life? It's more of an experiential thing. But it was a reminder in that moment when they were, just let my kid be my kid. Be careful with what I decide to tell her she, quote unquote, needs to be.
Yeah, and I think it kind of shows how, I think it's trying to reflect how parents don't always grow with their children. Like, the corrections that Freeman is making make sense when you're trying to teach somebody how to do something right. better. But now it's just nagging, and it's not letting Mariner live her own life. Like, Mariner is in her 20s now, maybe she's even 30. Like, whatever choices she's making, just let her do it. Just let her do it her way. Like, your role as a parent in that respect is kind of done. You're now dealing with, especially when they work for you, you're now dealing with a peer and somebody that is kind of established and is just going to do things the way they're going to do them. She's not kind of coaching or training her. It is just like straight up criticism
exactly.
as if Mariner is still a child.
Yeah. And I've been around people like that, and I've been in situations where I have been taught by people who observe what you're doing and just all they want you to do is do it their way, and they're going to be critical. And so there is a bit of a triggering element to that part of the episode today, but I think it's important in this episode to establish that this is kind of their back and forth. So mm-hmm. I wasn't too bothered by it because it was an interesting moment, and it really, really grated my nerves to the point that I'm like, yeah, Mariner, I can see why you're doing all the shit you're doing.
Yeah.
And I support you.
Yeah. I can see why you don't want to get promoted, because there's a world where like Freeman is going to take credit for every good thing that Mariner does. So it's like a fuck you, like, well, I'm such a screw up because you didn't parent me properly. You didn't raise me properly. And if I start succeeding, then that's a good reflection on you. And I don't want that. And that self-sabotage is so like well thought out and ingrained and in there. And it's so relatable and something you don't often see in Star Trek as well.
Mm-hmm. We do get to see a moment where Freeman recognizes Mariner's problem-solving skills, how quickly she assesses the situation once they arrive at the console, and then they're going to get gas and stuff. And then you do get a brief little glimpse that Freeman's like, that was my idea, coming from a brief. And then Mariner admits that she kind of read it, and then jokes, of course, that it was just to make fun of her. But like, there is an element where the show is so smart to reference how they're still making these quick decisions that are saving the lives of their crew and get back into the sci-fi of it all that we love so much. And so the writers are both giving us like this glimpse into these character work, giving us a glimpse in these elements, and then just plugging us right back into the reality of the ship that we're on, and keeping it lighthearted enough that it's still in that cartoon fantasy for me, which is fun.
What I love about Mariner is the 9 times out of 10, she does her job. Like, she does everything that is expected of her. She has the knowledge. She completes it all and has time to overlay this I don't give a fuck filter. And that's why it's so fun when we get to the end of the episode and she's like, oh, it's this carbon element. We need to flood the place with this gas and then pump it through the deflector dish. And it's like, oh, she knows what she's doing because she did read the mission report, even though she yawned all the way through it. Like,
she's
the most interesting
doing her
character.
Job. She actually cares. It's that she puts it through so many filters because succeeding is really difficult for her. And this episode shows a bit of why that is. And that continues to be a character arc for her later, if I remember correctly from other episodes that we watched. We also get to see Boimler and Mariner kind of at odds because she is succeeding. She's falling upwards in this episode where he is trying so hard to be able to go up in the ranks, and her flippancy is a trigger for him and it's upsetting for him, and he expresses that and I think this happens other times as well. And do we get to see angry saboteur Boimler again too? Or is this the only time that you can remember seeing that moment when he's like, oh, you like people who just fuck up all the time. Watch me go. Like, have we seen that part of him?
Yeah, he does dip back into that. I couldn't name the episode, but he does dip back in because he has a lot of revelations. Actually, we see it in season 3 where... what does he call himself? He's like, he gives himself a new name, doesn't he? It's not Action Boimler.
Bold Boimler? Bold Boimler is what we're hearing. Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks, chat. Slab in the chat jumped to my rescue. He comes out with Bold Boimler because going by the book isn't going to get him promoted. And I think it's when he does get promoted to lieutenant. And he's like, if I'm going to keep this and progress even further, then I need to be Bold Boimler. Yeah.
I feel like I saw some of that in an episode where we talked about it because...
season 3, which we did when it came out. Yeah.
Okay. My thought in this episode was, I recognize that face, you know, of like,
yeah.
But it's so interesting that this episode decided not to lean into that too far. I thought we were going to see more of the saboteur Boimler.
For sure. More than just the coffee spill.
But it was just a coffee spill.
I kind of ran out of time. Right to the crotch. And Ransom's going to be very protective of that member of his person. I thought we would see a lot more of that. I felt a little bit like they didn't know what to do with Boimler too much, because the most interesting thing about this episode for me is that it firmly makes Mariner the main character. So from the off, I thought it was going to be Boimler because he's us and he's like the Star Trek nerd that's going to go through the ranks. But this firmly puts Mariner as the main character in the season and the protagonist that we're following. So I was like, that's really interesting. And I like that the show, I don't know if it deliberately misdirected us, but this episode 4 is like, yeah, we're following Mariner's story here.
It is a clever thing to do to not make it really obvious in the first few episodes that there's enough shared screen time that you're not entirely sure who is going to be quote unquote the lead. So you're right. This one makes it more obvious, or it's just her episode. And I think, a lot of times in these series, you'll see different characters come to the forefront. I'm sure this one will be no different. Like, we got to see Tendi kind of come up to the forefront in this one too. Mm-hmm. And I love the lady characters in this. There's a lot of leading women that I'm really enjoying.
Oh, I love it so much. And Tendi, it is a treat to get some solid time with Tendi in this episode as well, as she follows a classic like kind of TNG trope of the ascended being and the creature that's going through an ascension. We see this in Transfigurations, which is like season 3 of TNG, I think. But it's a trope that pops up a lot. Either like you see the creature turn into a energy being of light, so it's, or the alien creatures have already got there, like the Metrons and the Organians, I think, are already there. But it's fun to see this end of the journey, which is a creature that knows they're going to, or we think know that they're going to ascend, and follow that bit and what it means. So it's classic Lower Decks to get into this trope, but attack it from an angle that we haven't seen before. It's really fun.
Yeah, yeah. I remember the Ascension episode from Strange New Worlds, I believe, because there was a character that was going to pass away, but then they kind of like became this other light beam.
Oh yeah, that
thing. Without spoilers, no spoilers.
Oh okay, sorry. No spoilers for season one of Strange New Worlds.
That's right. That's come out years ago now.
Yeah.
I thought that the character O'Connor, maybe was his name.
O'Connor, yeah. Which is weird because there's another O'Connor in Star Trek as well.
So I thought that this was one of the characters we see in later seasons that has a rivalry with Rutherford.
Yes. I know the one you mean.
Oh, here's the origin story of this sort of tumultuous start to all these friendships and why maybe there's just some deep-seated dissension amongst the friends or something. But it turns out, this guy's story arc is in this episode and we're just here for the end of it. And oh my God, I did not see that coming. And it's hilarious. I loved it so much. It's such a morbid turn.
It really is.
This is what I love about Lower Decks is that they do things that live action would not do, cannot do.
Mm-hmm. Put that hilarious bump into it.
like, it would be so, it would hit different. Like, it's his death slash ascension is,
it's a death,
is so horrible. Like, we're watching someone essentially burn alive with light and then have their mind taken over by this revelation of eternity and truth and koala god or whatever, which now I've finally seen the koala everyone's been telling me about, because this is the first time koala. That I, space koala. So yeah, it was, it's kind of like Tendi's there going, okay, hope.
Just, the pacing on it is so great, because he's just like, ow, this is burning, this is hurting, and you're like,
yeah,
oh, ascension isn't this glorious thing, like, it comes in different forms. And just the shift from this is glorious to that millisecond where his human brain has to reconcile having all of the knowledge of the universe, because once you're ascended, that's what you are, it's fine, but there's this bridge where you're still a human trying to comprehend all of this, and it just, like, implodes his brain, and he's like, why is this the answers? Why can I see everything? What is the koala? What does it want? It's so great. And Tendi's just like, why is this taking so long?
Yeah, it was bad.
It's so great.
It was bad. I'm everywhere and nowhere. Pure energy, the universe, koala, back of the koala. The secret of life is...
Yeah. Tendi's just like, okay, bye. Have fun being everywhere.
And it's like his boots, and she's just like, well, I guess this is the last bit that I have of this very strange relationship that she had, where she essentially stalks someone to force them to do the ascension. Like, if you think about it, if Tendi had just let him be, he'd still be alive.
Yes. Well, he'd be, I don't, wait. Yeah, no, he would. Yeah, because he survived being crushed by the rock. Yeah. Oh, no.
Well, if Tendi had left him alone, all that would have happened. He probably would have survived. And then he would have never had that moment between her to have whatever revelation he had that triggered the ascension, which happened after they kissed, right? So,
yes, like, exactly.
They also had like a little heart to heart. I just want to be liked. I also just want to be liked. And if she hadn't forced all that to happen, like, she is potentially completely and solely responsible for his ascension death. So,
completely. And it's like kind of buried in there, but it's another really like kind of cute element that we all kind of, not cute, but it's this thing that a lot of us go through of people pleasing. And then like the most offensive thing she did was to continue to press him to find out why he doesn't like her, instead of just letting it be like, you're going to fuck up, apologize, move on. Not everyone's going to like you. But that obsession, how self-destructive that can be as well. So I love how many messages that are really relatable Lower Decks manages to cram into 20 minutes as well.
Good luck being everything. Sorry I helped.
Yes. Like, she has such great lines. And
sorry I helped. And that's the thing too, is so like great. In her mind, she's helping, but in someone else's mind, your help is a hindrance. And at some point you should stop. And you know, for me, maybe you go the next day with your spiritual metronome and then it's bashed in front of your eyes. That should be it.
Yeah.
Right there. That I'll should leave be it
now. Yeah.
That should be it. I
nope.
went with my peace offering, but no, she shows up taking vacation days armed with Reiki knowledge. Oh my God, that line about her doing Reiki. I will Reiki you.
I'll align your chakras. I will Reiki you.
It's so funny. Like, that is
just throw all of the things out.
Oh my God. It was so crazy. But Tendi is the kind of person that she gets obsessive about it. And so you said you relate to that. So like you're watching this character get like a little obsessive and then you got triggered there.
Yeah, I'm a little bit, wow, am I that annoying when I'm trying to please people? Because I tend to be a people pleaser to a fault, when then I will, like, to the point where I've noticed that I have resented people because I'm trying to please them. And then I'm like, they didn't ask for this. They didn't ask for me to please them. Why do I resent them for the fact that I'm trying to please them and bend over backwards and it's not appreciated?
Is it an appreciation or reciprocation?
Well, that's what, no, it's appreciation. Like, why aren't they appreciating this thing they didn't ask me to do? Be aware of the battle. That's the battle.
That is very interesting. Robo took a back seat this episode.
Yeah, he's kind of Roboford? Just not there. Yeah, Robotford.
Boimler wasn't really too involved in this episode. Mm-hmm. Who else did we not see very much of that we usually do?
The I think that's pretty much it. The reason I started the top of the episode by saying this is a weird one, because the first 15 minutes are paced very strangely. Like, it's quite a slow start. There's obviously this big focus on Mariner being irritating and then being sabotaged, Boimler being frustrated, and an entire half of the episode happens before we have the Captain Durango of the USS Massat deciding to fuck everything and, out of pride, moving the ship and ripping the plate off, and then all of the organic matter from this generational terraforming ship being sucked.
Terraforming emulsion? Yes.
Emulsion being sucked into the tractor beams.
The molecular fluid from an inorganic material.
The moist stuff. Flooding the ships and causing all of the chaos. And then it's like 1,000 miles an hour, ramp into high gear, ship is under attack, gotta solve the problem, everything goes wrong. I, in my head, when I got to that point, I was like, I wish we got here sooner. Because separating it into all of like half an episode, establishing relationship problems, and then explosion, and then jump to action. For me, dealing with the relationship stuff, for me, works a bit better when you intertwine it with the adventure. So I wanted that explosion to happen sooner, because then we kind of get tricked into, this episode is about the terraforming goo and all of like the bad shit that can happen if it's misused, when actually the episode is about relationships and how you deal with your parents and whatnot. But splitting it into half didn't quite work for me.
So, and maybe this is to your point, what is the moist vessel?
The moist vessel is the generational ship and how it turns the Cerritos and the Massat into a organic being itself. So the generational ship is the moist vessel. But I also think moist vessel could be a euphemism for leaving the womb and letting your child go off and do their own thing as well.
Wow, that's
a lot. A lot of layers to this.
I just don't understand how they arrived at that title for this episode.
Because it's gross.
Like, I feel like I kind of just missed something.
No, I think people just don't like the word moist.
Goop vessel, or I don't know.
I mean, it is. It's a gloopy vessel because it has all of this like proto matter in it. So,
and it wasn't like it was all moist. It was, there was rocks and there was coral, very dangerous coral, exploding coral.
Damn this beautiful coral. Such a great line.
Yeah. So I kept wondering, watching the episode, I forgot about the title, and I don't think that the title really.
Yeah, it took me a while to get there, but I think it's meant to be deliberately triggering because a lot of people don't like the word moist. I think that is part of it. And then you have a vessel that they're interacting with. Maybe we'll find out that there is more behind it.
Mm.
But I think it's lots of different layers and motherhood and whatnot.
I see. Okay.
Can I tell you something funny that I had to stop from saying out loud when I saw it? So at the very beginning of the episode, Mariner's giving out the pads and they're having a briefing from Durango, and she does this huge yawn. And I look to you because I was like, she cannot be bored already. And the fact that it's Mariner that's yawning, but I thought it was you. It's so perfect. Just,
that's funny.
Like, oh, Danae's bored. Oh, wait, no, Mariner's bored. Wait, no, Danae is Mariner.
Did this episode make you actually yawn?
Not physically, no. Okay. But the first half of it got close.
I meant like physically, because sometimes you'll hear someone yawn and then you yourself also yawn.
Yeah, yeah, you're supposed to. It did not make me yawn, no.
Okay.
But I just thought it was great that you are 100% Mariner. You are so Mariner, it's amazing. What else did you love in this episode?
I like seeing all of the TNG style displays. The way the ship cars is kind of laid out. Like the screens and stuff. That was kind of nice. And it's also fun because even in the parts where Mariner is being promoted, for example, in the background, the voice actors are like, good job, well earned. You know,
yes.
this sort of banter that is really funny. I do wonder if they were in on it or they thought she was actually being promoted. And I think now that I've watched the entire thing, that she was actually promoted.
She genuinely was.
Yes. And
I thought she was the horrible motive behind it. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that they were all kind of in on it a bit and were going to try to like pull a prank on her or something. But no, this was genuinely episode of a mother wanting to frame her daughter's dismissal. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's pretty terrible.
Pretty terrible. But the background parts of it and even the animation with, I don't know how everything was going, was really fun to watch. It was really delightful. Visually, I think this was a really beautiful episode.
Yeah, I love the rapid fire TNG tropes of like the officers meeting. We have like the debriefing. We have the poker game. We have
deciding
all
about
the things.
Chairs with the leather base strip down the middle.
The strip down the middle because Picard's chair has a fabric strip and everyone else's doesn't. It's amazing. Just I love the, this is what Lower Decks promised as well, like a more mundane look at what Starfleet is like and the decisions you have to make day to day when you're not being chased by Romulans.
Right. And I think like between the jazz music and being told that he's going to play the guitar and all these different things going on, I think that's what you're talking about with the pace shift for this one, where at the beginning it's got all of those elements of the deeper cuts of what boring life is like when you're a lieutenant versus what we see. I do feel like it's an important thing for us to see, though, because it did get a little bit like, ooh, you're forced to attend someone's birthday party and hear them do music and you're auditing the audits and, you know, and maybe most of us have experienced and maybe you have it in your life and you might someday where you outpace your passion in your job, where you'll take a promotion or you'll take a job thinking that it's closer to what you want to do to kind of experience what it's like to be in leadership or have more responsibility. And then there's potentially and oftentimes a bit of like regret of just like leaving the simplicity. Like maybe you don't get paid as much, but man, it sure is nice to clock off at the end of the day and not have to be the one that's counting all of the receipts.
Well, there's this interesting logic where we promote people when they're really good at their job, but part of the promotion is promoting them into a different job. So it's like you should kind of maybe be promoting people that aren't good at the job that they're doing, but you've seen their skill set might work in a different position or higher up. And then when you're really good at something, it's like, that doesn't necessarily mean promoting you means you're going to be good at the next thing.
The trick is, I think you have to experience promotion before you know that it isn't for you.
Yeah.
And it takes some personal experience to know when your boss pulls you into the room to tell you that they've got a promotion lined out to be able to navigate the waters of saying, that's actually not what I'm passionate about. I really like what I'm doing right now.
Yes, exactly. And that's hard. That can be hard to say.
It is hard to do. But it's also sometimes hard to go backwards because once you take a promotion or you take a job pay increase or something, and then you realize you've outpaced your passion, going back is really difficult because you're like, well, I want to go do what I was doing before and I'll take the pay cut to do it.
Yeah.
And we see later that Mariner has had many opportunities to actually be in leadership and she prefers to be in this sort of role and often is holding herself back or self-sabotaging so that she doesn't have to advance in the ranks. And I think that this is like a really important glimpse for us to see in this episode how boring it can be to be lieutenant and then makes us want to stay in Lower Decks. You know, like we kind of don't want to go back up to the, you know, the people who are making all the decisions. We want to stay with the fun.
No, people don't want responsibility. Like, it's not for everyone. There's this myth that you have to progress and you have to strive to be captain. Like, that's the 1%. Like, not everybody wants that leadership role. Everyone is different.
And I think them taking the time to show us that part of advancing is a really, really important thing to do in the first few episodes of this series, since it is the more silly Lower Decker series. So.
Yeah. And Mariner's issue with being promoted, etc. I think it's kind of until season two that we dig into that a little bit more. But I always wanted to dig into more. Like, how many times have you been promoted? How did you get depromoted? I want to know more. It's super
now
interesting
we see it.
To me. I love that.
There's also a moment I don't want to go without. During the poker thing, there was this animation that they did with Handsome Ransom where his lips are poofed out. He's like, like while he's making this decision.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but when there's just something that's so humanly normal, just like a weird tick that we do or, you know, making noises with our mouth, but then they animate it, it's a purposeful choice to say, hey, voice actor, I want you to make these weird noises with your lips. And then they are animating it and it just looked really funny. And that was the second time that the second thing I laughed at really hard on this one. It was so stupid.
Oh,
it was just like the animation of his stupid lips.
The other thing I figured you'd like is the don't give me that sarcastic Vulcan salute. Like,
oh, I loved that too.
That exploded when this episode came out. Everyone was just like posting like gifs of Mariner doing the backwards Vulcan salute. It's so great. It's taking this iconic Star Trek, one of the most iconic pieces of Star Trek fandom, and then making it their own. Is so bold, and I love it so much. And Freeman just so offended by it, and Mariner just owns it. I love it so much.
There's another fun reference in this one too that I actually got that I wouldn't have before, which is the Moriarty reference.
Yeah, you knew that, the evil computer program.
I actually knew that one when Boimler is still live on the mic and ends up saying some pretty nefarious shit. Gotta be bad, Boimler. What? That was Moriarty. Just
I'm on the holiday. It was Moriarty.
So I might not have gotten other references that were made, but I definitely got that one this time.
Love that so much. It's great. Oh, sorry. One more thing that cracked me up that I can't believe they saved for the very end of the episode was the admiral that comes in and says, "I'm sorry, I have to leave. We've detected something strange on the long-range sensors." And then Freeman says, "Sensors." And Ryan's just like, wait, what do you mean sensors? That's not how you say, do you mean sensors? You don't say sensors. And it's not just a dumb joke, because this is how Worf says sensors. This is how Picard says sensors in the first couple of seasons. Like, Data, Geordi, this is such a season one, season two thing about TNG. And Spock from TOS would say sensors as well. And I've always wondered why. And it wasn't really until this episode where I was like, oh, it is weird. It is a strange thing. It's not just like an American thing, because that can happen with language a lot. And I'm just like, oh, I guess that's just how Americans say it. But to like hang a lantern on that and be like, no, saying sensors is very weird and you should stop it. I love that. It's one of my favorite Lower Decks nods. It's such a weird, a deep cut.
Yeah. I also liked, and I saw this pointed out in the chat earlier, it's also in my notes, that Mariner was suggesting what to do and solves a day, and then she's hitting the debrief. And then the captain says something about compute, like something about hitting it.
Yeah.
Hit it.
Freeman's like, hit it. And the computer's just like, hitting it.
Hitting it.
So dead.
That was clever.
Yeah, love that. Yeah. Love that. Okay, well, if that's everything, let's head over to engineering to do some sins. Two to be out.
Is it red alarm? Red alarm?
Red alarm.
Warning. Warp core collapse in 10 seconds.
Red alarm. Red alarm.
This is the part of the show where we re-engage our sin brains, remind ourselves that no TV shows without sin, even our beloved Star Trek. Go ahead, Ambassador.
I don't believe that Tendi would have been late to the Ascension. And I assume she's late because when she walks in, everyone was already seated and she had to kind of awkwardly make her way into this little Ascension circle situation.
That bit felt, the whole thing felt a little bit contrived, because Tendi isn't kind of, I don't know, maybe she's clumsy, but I didn't really see her as being carelessly clumsy.
No.
So, she gets distracted by the
gong. Yeah. Yeah. And I just didn't believe that she was going to be like that. She was that person.
Yeah.
To show up late and to sort of like rudely chant along and all of this. And unless the Ascension was just constantly going on and it didn't start at a certain time. I don't know. I got the impression she was late and then she made a mess. I didn't believe that.
It felt a little bit contrived to get to the bit of the episode we needed to get to. I didn't think she'd be like, she asks the question and then hums before she gets an answer from anybody. So as an observer, you'd think she'd be a little bit more like in tune. Like, read the room, Tendi, read the room. So at the beginning of the episode, we've got Mariner yawning through a briefing. Just stop letting Mariner attend these briefings. Like, don't give her the pad handout duty. Like, if you're worried about her embarrassing you in front of a colleague, stop putting her in these meetings. Like, give it to Boimler, he'll love this shit. Give it to somebody else. But Mariner should never have been in that room to be yawning through it.
Yeah, yeah. There was another computer moment where the scene starts and chaos is erupting around the ship and the computer says, unauthorized terraformation. I was like, well, is there authorized? Why is that something that a computer would say?
Yes.
Wouldn't it be like unauthorized attack or...
Yeah.
unauthorized terraformation is already in the computer somehow. I just didn't understand that. So
how many weird commands are in there? Like, how many if you've got terraforming in there, how many other unauthorized things can the computer pull from? Yeah, I like that. I don't know that I would have thought of that one. As Mariner is going through all of the different jobs and she's like fixing something with the turbo lift, Shax should not be able to use that turbo lift. She could have died. She could have been killed. That not the do not use sign shouldn't have been a thing. That should be offline. It's weird. Could have killed her.
Yeah. This sin is brought up in the chat, but it's going to launch a larger thing that I forgot to ask you about, which is about the replicators. This is the first time we've heard that replicators have different programs that have different food.
Yeah, this is the first time that we're hearing that the replicators are elitist and that there is a tiering system where the plebs don't get the good food that the officers do. And I guess that's an energy resource thing.
I mean, but it's
I kind of buy it.
I do too. It certainly is something that you see even in break rooms. Like certain break rooms will have certain things that others don't.
Yeah.
But I've never heard of that before, that there's a different replicating program. So this might be the first time that it's been mentioned. So I guess
the first time I've heard it canonically mentioned, but I completely buy it because they have different accommodation. There clearly is a pecking order. So I get that there might be different menus and because whenever there's a promotion on board, like Picard would say, I hereby promote you to Lieutenant Commander with all the rights and privileges therein. So I was like, what extra privileges are you like? I know there's extra responsibilities, but what extra privileges are you getting?
Yeah, better bathrooms and apparently this better replicator program.
Yeah.
Which was being sinned in the chat, but I think that maybe we agree that it's just a great idea.
Yeah, I think it kind of makes sense.
But I would be a lower decker, so I would sin it because I also would like to have special macaroni.
I want the macaroni and I want the special shrimp as well. Mm-hmm. I want all of that. I'm amazed that there isn't an automated way to decarbon the carbon filters because they were just shooting it with phasers. And when they do the graffiti, they shoot the walls with phasers. I get finding multiple functions for the energy beam that you can put in a pistol, but there must be a way that the computer can do this. Like, can you put it through the phaser array? Like, put the carbon filters on a conveyor belt to the phaser array and then just, like, internally fire the phasers at the carbon filter and then send it back. I just think there's a lot more that we would have automated at this point.
Yeah. Speaking of phasers, why not use them instead of rocks?
Yeah. I mean, maybe they couldn't get to a phaser. Yeah, because
they
kept
seem to just
lockers.
Be about everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, they're not usually carried on your person. They're usually in a weapons locker or something.
Yeah. Yeah. It just feels like they're everywhere. They're usually over on a panel.
They
if you're under attack, they always turn to a panel, push a little thing, it pops out, they grab
a phaser. Surprise phaser. Yeah, like a first aid kit. Where's your nearest phaser? I had a very simple one. The Cerritos survives this. Like, multiple hull breaches. Like, you get a good external shot of all of the rocks poking out of the ship. And it's messed up. I'm amazed the Cerritos survives this. Sci-Fi Brony brings up a point that I did wonder as well. Why is Mariner being given a gold uniform with her promotion? Is she changing divisions? Why? And it's not impossible. It could happen. Maybe she did change divisions. Nick said maybe she's fitting into an available slot. But it's never mentioned. It's never explained. It's just, here's a yellow uniform. And I think it's just to look weird. This always messes me up. Like, there's an episode where Data is commander for a little while and he's in a red uniform. And seeing Data in a red uniform is one of the most jarring things I've ever seen. It's so weird to see him in all red. It doesn't match, like, his android complexion. He's in yellow and that's it. Seeing Geordi in red in season one messes me up as well. It looks super weird. Whenever Worf is in red, unless it's Deep Space Nine, it looks weird. Seeing Picard in the blue turquoise color, really freaking weird. Seeing Riker in yellow during the Transporter Twin episode, really freaking weird. I don't like it. Don't change colors. This is important, Danae. I'm not alone. Back me up, people. It's weird.
We're immediately accustomed to whatever we're shown first, and anything after that is wrong.
100%. And I'm not going to try and reprogram my brain. I'm done. That's it. Let's end the show. Next week, thanks for joining us, everyone. Next week, we will be doing Season 1, Episode 5 of Lower Decks, which is Cupid's Errant Arrow. Thank you for joining us. If you have any questions, send them over to captainspod@cinemasins.com. We didn't have time for any this week, but we will try to do one next week. You can also join our lovely community of Trekkie Nerds, where you can feel free to join and be as mad about uniforms as you want. And without any fear of judgment, at discord.gg/cinemasins. And before we go, how would you like to rank this episode, Ambassador? I'm giving it 2 pips.
I'm going to give it 2.5 pips.
I think that's absolutely fair. It's a fair ranking.
It slides into the 0.5 because that second half is just delightful, and watching somebody just get so eviscerated by an Ascension with a koala in space, that is so fucking bonkers. It has to be sliding up towards three.
I think if we restructured the episode as I'd suggested, maybe I can see this getting a higher ranking. I would love to see an episode where the explosion stuff happens a bit earlier. I think that might go three pips.
I might 3-pip it.
I might give it 2.5 because of the end Ascension scene.
It's like a sliding, we're sliding up.
The space koala really does save it.
Let's go 3. We'll align with the chat.
I'm sticking to 2.5. 2.5. Amazing. So until next week, I'm Captain Ian, and I have to go scrub some carbon off of some slightly harder carbon.
And it's, oh man, look at these amplitudes.
Live long and prosper.
Thanks for listening. Want to connect with the show? Our hailing frequencies are always open through captainspod@cinemasins.com. Like, comment, and subscribe on your podcast player of choice, and be sure to visit cinemasins.com.
Hello.
Hi.
Stop yelling at me, God.
Did I yell at you?
You cannot. God damn it. You fucking hear me. You could just put the fucking shit. God. Okay.
You can't hear me?
Let's see. Why? Microphone should be the microphone. Hello?
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Could you
I
not
can
hear
also
me?
Hear myself. I could hear you before, yes.
I thought you were fucking with me.
No, I said hi.
How many times?
I was talking to you the whole time.
It sounded like you were like, I can't hear you. And I was like, fuck. So then I went to go look and see what. So could you hear yourself before, but now you can't?
Correct, yes.
God fucking damn it.
I couldn't hear myself before, and now I can.
Ian, why are you fucking with me? Stop it.
I'm not.
Okay, can you hear yourself? Can you
hear yourself? No, I can't.
Okay. Let's write this down.
There was no fucking
with
you.
Don't fuck with me anymore.
Oh, fuck.
So you can't hear yourself. That's important. Can you hear this?
Yes. That sounds like computer panel
right?
pinging.
Listen to all this.
That's a little bit quiet. Oh, and then sad downshift.
Yeah, they're kind of
quiet, but I love it. It sounds like knockoff Star Trek sound effects.
It is. That's exactly what it is. It might as well have been called knockoff Star Trek. I did also find this one.
Oh, this is like the innocent...
I know.
We're not doing anything wrong.
But then this one. And then this one.
Oh, that's mischievous.
Then this one.
Nice. That's it. Pumped.
Other questions about the vagina.
Nope.
What does the vagina do? What is another name for female vagina?
Vagina. I mean, that is another name for the female vagina.
It's
the vagina.
V-I-G-I-N.
How is your vagina?
What is the vagina in biology? Why are we spelling it vagina? So, space news. Let's talk about a little bit of space news. Or really just any news in general. Okay, how are you feeling, Ian, about the quote-unquote astronauts that are stranded?
I think it's a hilarious embarrassment. I'm glad they're okay. I am sorry for their families that instead of being gone for a week, they're now gone for possibly 18 months.
Can you imagine that?
Yeah, they may not be able to come back until like early next year. It's crazy. And Boeing are just beyond screwed. Like, because NASA has such little faith in Boeing that they won't let them send an update that will allow for like a remote undocking in case that update means the ship is stuck and blocks one of the only ports on the ISS. So NASA are just like, we're tempted to jettison this thing so that we know we can get that port back. It's crazy. I love this note from Cameron. I'm here and watching, but my DM, Dungeon Master, told me to roll a backup character for our session tomorrow, so I may be quiet in the chat. That's not something you ever want to hear from your DM.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. TPK, coming your way.
Okay, let's talk about Dungeons & Dragons for a second. As a DM, I think I would actually consider telling my people to roll a backup character just to fuck with them. Would you?
Yeah, I think they should. When I've DM'd a thing, I've told everybody have one anyway, because those levels 1 to 3 are very tricky to scale.
They're so squishy.
Encounters, because you're so squishy. You are so, so squishy. So I'm like, definitely have one in case I mess up, because I'm not backing down.
See, that's the thing. I was DMing to tell story more than I was DMing to...
Well, the people that I was DMing for are like hardcore D&D people. So they're there for both, but they really want... They want to know that the fight that they're in, they won it fair and square and not because I fudged the numbers.
So behind the scenes, Ian and I have been talking about D&D again like quite a lot. This is how it goes. God, I wish we had more time to do more things that we want to do.
Look, it's one of the greatest mysteries in Star Trek. Why do we need transporter rooms? And I think it's an energy-saving thing. Mm-hmm. I think it's more efficient. You can transport people to anywhere on the ship, but it's more efficient to do it in the transporter room. Back in TOS...
Okay, all right. Moving on to the next one.
No. This is really interesting. Back in TOS, site-to-site transports were a big deal. Because they're, like, trying to do something, and Kirk is just like, can you beam me directly from the bridge to this part of the ship? And Scotty's like, I can, but it's super risky. Like, that's not what we're meant to do. And then TNG kind of throws that out the window. But originally, you had to do it in the transporter room. You couldn't just transport willy-nilly site to site.
I'm using an old pen that I found. Uh-huh. This is a Pilot Precise V5 Rolling Ball Extra Fine Green Pen.
Why do we have to name them so many things? What's the X5
for? They look like that. Probably because this is the style.
Amazing.
Like it has you can see the liquid ink and then it sort of like makes its way down into the end. Anyway, I'm fucking covered in green goddamn ink now. Like,
yeah, they're great. They write beautifully, but they are a menace.
They're grim.
Yeah, you look like a Romulan just bled on you.
I was shocked to learn that Iris is going to learn how to do cursive in the second grade.
Yeah, it doesn't seem necessary, does it?
It is an easier way to write, in my opinion.
It is. Yeah, agreed. Yeah, it's how I would choose to write if I'm not worried about anyone being able to understand it. Yeah.
But you don't write in cursive.
The crucial bit there is if I'm not worried about people having to understand it. So whenever you've read something that I've written, it's because I want you to be able to understand it. Just like, don't write in cursive. If it's for me, then I'll write in cursive.
Could you write in cursive? I want to see what it looks like.
Yeah, absolutely.
I want to see like how bad is it? Is it actually bad? I think mine would rank on the upper part of the bad scale. Like you'd read it and be like, ooh, that's not easy to read, but it's still legible.
Yeah, like every single time it looks different.
Yeah, well, I guess. Okay.
Here is my example of cursive.
Well, I know what it is because the first thing is too boldly. But it looks like too sadly. No, too. It looks like a capital S.
Yeah, this proves my point perfectly.
Go where no one has gone before. But like, I know what it says.
Oh, should I write something gibberish then?
Yeah, something that I don't.
Not gibberish, but something you won't know.
Yeah, my brain immediately knew what it was.
Okay, here's my gibberish, and don't ask why this came into my head.
The soppy, the poppy, the puppy. Nope, exploded into a million. Exploded, that has to be exploded into is for sure a million, that's a for sure. Puppers, the
nice.
The poppy.
Mm-hmm.
Is it poppy?
Yeah,
exploded into a million puppers?
Close.
Gubbers? Cuppers?
No, the puppy exploded into a million puppies.
I got it.
You did great. Yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't like it took you longer than if I need you to read something I've written, I don't want you struggling that hard with it.
Why not? Man, we've got nothing but time.
That's one thing I know is not true.
Okay, I'm going to do one.
This has been Cursive Corner with Ian and Danae.
Okay, and I tried to do it fast.
Today, I ate tater tots.
But look at the word tots.
But again, this is like me saying to boldly go. I knew exactly what that was going to be before I read it.
Okay.
The poppy exploded into a million puppies. Why would you write the same thing that I wrote?
I like that you're trolling the audience that can't see what I'm doing because you have some sort of power here. That is not what I wrote.
Wow, it's out of focus a little bit.
I don't know how to make it stay in focus. I'm sorry.
I
was in focus.
Aware that I take... Wow. I have no idea. Cursive is useless. I am that I live at, but I hope so. I am getting there. So that I...
You're proving the point. You're proving the point. You can't read it.
Cursive is useless.
It's not useless. It's fun. It's kind of like it's partially getting the message across. It's partial like code that you're supposed to break.
No, because the code you can decode.
It's like Bletchley Park for the...
Yeah. All of Bletchley Park was just deciphering bad handwriting from Germans. Yeah, I hear that's what... They were just really good at deciphering cursive.
I'm just saying... Those people are the fucking heroic. I was trying to explain friend Shannon about Bletchley Park and how it was such an unexpected thing to experience because your parents took us there.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what we were in for. You'd been there before or no? I can't remember.
Yeah, I'd been there before. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's fascinating.
It's one of those things that I think everybody in England should visit at least once. Like
everybody in America should go see that shit. That's why D-Day worked.
Without hyperbole, they won the war. Like, there is no winning the war without the ladies that decoded everything at Bletchley Park.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
100%.
And it's something that you would never know because it was a secret.
Yeah, all of the secrets, like, they couldn't brag. During the 40s and 50s, Germany, Russia, everything was still at risk. So everything was locked down for decades.
Yeah.
Because it was all still stuff that was being used and could be used against us in the 50s and 60s and whatnot. So, yeah, they had to keep it on lockdown until historically relatively recently. So, yeah, it's amazing.
You know what D-Day is, but you don't know how it got to that point.
Yeah.
Like, it's incredible. D-Day was a success, a horrific success.
Yeah.
Because of this, like, Bletchley Park subterfuge that was going on. Of cracking a code and then sending misinformation, confirming the misinformation through the code breaking. It was just fucking crazy.
It's so great. And even if you cracked the code, you couldn't give away that you cracked the code.
No.
So they had to let people die because if they intercepted this convoy or they stopped this one thing, the Germans would change the code
too quickly.
Ahead of the more important thing that you're trying to stop and find out about. It's so messed up. Yeah.
You go to Bletchley Park and you're like, okay, so this was a big secret.
Yeah.
Let me slowly introduce you to what this big secret is. And then by the time you're at the end of Bletchley Park, you're like, oh, geez, God, I'm in the middle of this web of generals and presidents and all of these people doing all these things with this information that started with like a couple ladies and some paper.
Yeah. Just paper and paper and paper. Just
paper
people that were genuine. The advert went out. Are you good at crosswords? Contact us on this number. I kid you not.
Yeah. And as somebody who likes puzzles, you go in and you think, okay, I want to stop and try to understand this machine that you guys built to decode the code machine.
Permutations.
You built a machine to decode the code machine.
Yes.
I want to understand this, but my feeble mind...
I understand it as much as I understand how computers work, and that's fitting because it is a computer. It's the most analog version of a computer that you can have. The absolute fluke of one of them, I remember, was the Germans had been told not to use, like, personal names or names that were like close to them or something that it would be recognizable. And one of the, and I can't remember anybody's names, but one of the English ladies decoding was like, what if that's his girlfriend?
Yeah.
And then that basically unlocked this entire string of codes.
There were two huge moments of people that they're like, what if it's more simple than that? What if they're using a name? They're using a name and they're supposed to change it, but they're just people too. I think he was smoking a cigarette one afternoon and he was like at his, just in his lobby going, what if it's just his girlfriend's name? And then and then they realized that the Germans had got, like, they'd gotten very, very comfortable.
Uh-huh.
And rather than make it a complicated word, they were just Mary.
Yeah. And just reusing the same stuff as well. I think they used like one of the most common German names. And that like unlocked the code. It's like, oh, it was John.
All along.
Your password was password. Damn it. I wonder if people listen to the outtakes and like, where does this stuff come from? And it's literally, we just sit behind the mic, we talk, we get onto cursive writing, and then we get onto code breaking at Birchley Park. That's why we do the outtakes.
Yep. Welcome to the wandering mind of Danae and Ian.
It's amazing.